This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Traditional revenue sources for public media and really the media at large are declining this year, and we at Marketplace are not immune to these trends. We're currently tracking behind target for this budget year. We are tightening up expenses, but the need for trusted, grounded, fact-based reporting is as pressing as ever. We can't cut back on our mission, so we are turning to listeners like you. Please step up now and invest in Marketplace. If you haven't yet given, now is the time. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
Inflation is just about conquered, at least according to one number. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. So the latest measure of inflation puts it at 2.6% year over year in November. Month to month, overall prices fell 0.1%. Fell. Partly because the price of gas has been coming down. But there is more to it, and for that, we've got Christopher Lowe, as we do on Fridays. He's chief economist at FHN Financial in New York. Hi, Chris.
Good morning, Sabri.
So there's 2.6% annual inflation, but also, if you just look month to month, prices actually went down 0.1%. That sounds pretty great.
It's amazing. You know, gasoline prices have been falling for 3 months now, since mid-September. They dropped enough in November to pull the headline inflation rate down. Price pressures have moderated dramatically in the last 6 months.
Now, energy is super volatile. Food can be volatile. So you take those out and you get what's called core inflation. That's a little higher. That's 3.2% year over year. How do we feel about that?
The Fed targets 2% inflation. So obviously, if the core is rising 3.2, that would suggest they still have work to do. But there's so much progress that's been made in recent months that if you look at just the last 6 months and annualize it, the rate of core inflation is 1.9%. So again, if you're shooting for two, we're there.
Christopher Lowe, chief economist at FHN Financial in New York, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sabri.
President Joe Biden says the proposed purchase of U.S. steel by Japan-based Nippon Steel, quote, appears to deserve serious scrutiny. And he suggested the deal should be reviewed by a federal committee that screens foreign investments, especially ones involving sensitive technology like AI or semiconductors and geopolitical rivals like China. But steelmaking is not AI or computer chips, and Japan is not China. As Marketplace's Henry Epp reports, this drama is playing out against the backdrop of the 2024 election.
Though Japan is a strong economic and political ally of the U.S., the fact that any foreign-owned company might purchase U.S. steel raised opposition from the United Steelworkers Union. The union says it wasn't consulted on the deal, though Nippon claims it will honor, quote, all of U.S. steel's commitments with its employees. Support from the union is crucial for President Biden's re-election hopes next year, especially in U.S. steel's home state of Pennsylvania. And the union said it welcomed the White House's suggestion that the deal might get more scrutiny. That scrutiny would come from a committee that has stepped up its reviews of foreign business deals. It hasn't necessarily stopped more deals from going through, but last year it did place a higher number of requirements on foreign companies investing in the U.S. I'm Henry Epp for Marketplace.
New York State's Attorney General is suing SiriusXM, saying the satellite radio company intentionally makes the process of canceling long and burdensome, forcing subscribers to talk with an agent before canceling and then deliberately drawing out those conversations. Sirius, for its part, says this is not true. Either way, we all know there are plenty of companies out there that do make it hard for customers to get out of subscriptions. So we asked Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes to seek some advice for how to go about it.
Canceling a subscription is kind of like going to a gym class. You might need some motivational sayings, however cliche, to get through it. So, motivational saying number one, be strong.
Tell yourself ahead of time, I am not going to get talked into anything.
Teresa Murray is with the U.S. Public Interest Research Group, or PIRG. She says to have all your account information written down in front of you and not to get distracted by any promotions a customer service agent offers.
Because otherwise, you're going to be in the same situation again and rotting on hold again.
Which brings us to motivational saying number two, be ready to put in the time. Raghu Iyengar is a marketing professor at Wharton.
If you're going to upgrade, guess what? It'll happen in like 2 minutes. If you want to leave, you might be on hold for a little while.
Iyengar says if you can't get through to a real person, read the fine print to see if there are other ways to get in touch with a company. And when you do get a hold of someone, PIRG's Teresa Murray says, you got to be nice.
Because, you know, the person on the other end of the phone call, they're just doing their job.
And to avoid the pain of cancellation, financial and otherwise, Murray suggests being mindful of what you subscribe to in the first place. Which brings us to one final well-known saying, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
People are leaving Cuba in droves. Around 400,000 Cubans have come to the U.S. over the last 2 years. The driver is largely economics. Basic necessities like food, medicine, power are getting difficult to come by for many on the island. And the latest wave of Cuban migrants is doing something new. They're traveling to the U.S. border via land. For more on this, Guillermo Grenier joins us. He's a professor of sociology at Florida International University. Welcome.
Great to be here.
How are people getting to the U.S. from Cuba? How expensive is it to make that happen?
It's a costly trip to make. Trump closed the embassy. The consular services were shut down. People could not get visas to come legally to the United States without going to a third country. That opened up the land route. So now the most popular, if you want to use that word, way of getting through here is going to Nicaragua. And it costs about $15,000-$16,000 to get from Nicaragua to the United States. You play coyotes. That's the growing rate to about $16,000.
Wow.
Yeah. Not many Cubans have that in your pocket. There's a slowdown now because of U.S. policies. We're allowing other ways for Cubans to get in through sponsorships and paroles, et cetera. Plus, we've opened up the embassy's consular services again, so there are more folks trying to get visas. But still, in September, there were 11,000 Cubans at the border in Southwest, which is 4,000 more than last month.
What has this influx of economic migrants meant for South Florida, for the U.S., for the U.S. immigration system, which has been under such strain?
I cannot emphasize enough how chaotic it is in our southwestern border. It's a very difficult environment for Cubans here. It's tough to get a job, and it's tough to pay rent, and it's tough to get health care. And you do get relief in that through the Department of Children and Families, which does an incredible job giving all immigrants their benefits in the state of Florida. But still, they're limited. South Florida is used to immigration, but still, it increases cost of living while deflating real wages. So it's not an economic nirvana here.
Do you see a world where Cuba has a chance to rebound economically?
When we talk about Cuba, we end up talking like you and I have been talking about these abstractions of economies, but the people are amazing. And I have little gifts from people from inside of Cuba that if you look at them, you'd laugh because they're nothing, but it's what they had to give, and they give it gladly because they won. They're that kind of folks. So if the U.S. would change some of its policies, that would be the quickest way that Cuba could rebound. I don't have faith, but I have a vision that if the United States were just to slightly change the policies, if we would just treat Cuba normally, like every country, I think we would see Cuba rebound.
Guillermo Grenier is professor of sociology in the Department of Global and Sociocultural Studies at Florida International University. Professor Grenier, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
We've got more on what's happening to Cuba's economy to drive so many people away on the podcast. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.